Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. The 2012 Prevention Report Card finds that North Carolina has a long way to go in key public health indicators. The report ranks the state on tobacco prevention, nutrition, obesity, and physical activity. Here to talk about the results is the president of Prevention Partners, Dr. Meg Malloy. Well, Meg, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chris.
Let's talk about the report card. Obviously, I want to ask you about each specific category, but overall, what are your impressions? How's North Carolina doing?
Well, with the 2012 North Carolina Prevention Report Card, what we're doing is taking an early look at where the state needs to be at the end of the decade. It's like the PSAT, where you take an early test so that you're going to be successful on the SAT, and if you look at North Carolina's grades right now, the results are very mixed. We are at a B in tobacco prevention, which is a very good thing for a tobacco-producing state. But unfortunately, in the other categories, we are at a D in physical activity, and we have an F in nutrition and an F in obesity. We definitely have our work cut out for us.
Now, let's just take those one at a time. Obviously, you mentioned it is interesting that a tobacco-producing state is doing well in tobacco prevention. On the other hand, the 2011 General Assembly, while funding some of the programs, abolished the Health and Wellness Trust Fund in North Carolina. So I guess we're in danger of maybe losing that B if we're not careful.
We are absolutely in danger for backsliding, and that is one of the clear messages of this report card. Over the last decade, we saw tobacco improve from a D to a B, and that was really because of dedicated funding and attention given to helping schools go tobacco-free, hospitals go tobacco-free, the General Assembly and state government buildings go tobacco-free, and some other important things. And right now, those items are on the chopping block because of the tight economy. We need to recognize that we need to maintain funding for youth prevention so that kids continue to choose not to smoke. And so there's critical initiatives that were funded by the Health and Wellness Trust. And last year, those funds were continued through the Division of Public Health. Right now, those funds are at very high risk. So we really need to make sure that we maintain those funds to secure really good health for our population, because if we don't put a small amount of money into the tobacco prevention, we're going to be paying so much more in just a few short years for tobacco-related illness. And so we can't be penny wise and pound foolish. We've really got to maintain that B. And our goal is to actually move North Carolina in this decade from the B in tobacco to an A. We really can do this, Chris. We can actually do a couple of strategic things and move our state to actually the head of the class in preventing tobacco use and keeping people healthy. So that's really the strategy we should be taking and never backslide.
And what would those strategies be?
Well, right now, as you are familiar with, the cigarette excise tax is about a dollar less than it is on the national average, which means that in our state, we are still having, it's more affordable here, and so young people are still more likely to take it up. And we know for every increase in the cigarette tax, we see a significant drop in people who are using tobacco. They make the decision to quit because it's pinching their pocketbook, and they've really been thinking about quitting for a long time. So we can really do a lot to really continue to reduce tobacco use by looking at that piece. And while we have some stronger and stronger policies going in place for keeping secondhand smoke in restaurants and bars, we still don't have protection in every workplace. So while a lot of organizations are doing this voluntarily one at a time, a state law to protect all employees from tobacco smoke would really take us a long way to improving our tobacco use rate. And I think the third issue that's true everywhere in the nation is that right now where tobacco use is greatest tends to be among folks who are struggling with mental health conditions and veterans. And there are certain populations that really need extra assistance in quitting tobacco, and some resources really need to be put towards assisting our mental health system and assisting our veterans to really think about the opportunity to quit smoking.
And now moving to the other areas where we have a D and two Fs, physical activity, nutrition, and obesity. All those obviously are very closely related. What is the problem, do you think, in North Carolina? Why are we struggling so much with our health?
That's the $64,000 question, Chris. And I think the science isn't as clear on all the things we can do to make a difference. But we know so much that we, as a state and as leaders in our state, we just need to start doing the things that we know work. Even though the science hasn't been written at the last couple chapters, we can start on the first half of the book, and we can use the science that's out there. And I feel like what really we need to think about is it's time to stop doing the analysis and the discussion, and it's time to take action on those things. So I think part of our vision is that we know that tobacco went from a D in a tobacco-producing state to a B. our goal is to commit to getting nutrition and physical activity from these very low grades. We need to shoot to be at a B at the end of this decade. We did it in tobacco, and we know we can do it. Again, what we really need is leadership support, and that needs to come from the public and the private sector, because there's so many things that we know what we can do, and some of it needs to happen in the public setting with leadership, and much of it can be done in the private sector.
How much of a problem is the, I don't know what the right word would be, maybe the resistance by some folks? You know, we see an individual story maybe of a child, a nutritionist at school, maybe substituting something, and it sets off a national outrage, and it feels like there's a big, in some ways, pushing back against what folks on the conservative side call the nanny state. And is that, does that make it harder to have policy initiatives that improve these grades?
I think the smartest way to look at this is if we can create an environment where good choices can happen, so that if you walk into a school or to your workplace cafeteria and even at your house, that if you have good choices in front of people, they have the opportunity to make them. If you don't have any healthy food or very little healthy food there, you cannot make a healthy choice unless you have one. So at schools, we really need to give access to what we consider good-tasting and affordable healthy food as the default choice. If the healthy foods are twice the price, that really, really takes a lot of people to choose something that's more in their pocketbook. So what we've learned and what we've seen in many, many settings is that if you consider your main entree, if you're at the cafeteria folks at school or in a hospital or at a workplace, you put the healthy item on the front of the line, you make it the special of the day, and you price it right, people buy it. And incentivizing folks to make reasonable choices and making them easy to make reasonable choices is critical. So if you go to a vending machine and you can only find one healthy thing and it's twice the price, most people are really not going to pick that item. So I think we can put good choices in front of people, provide education, and then, yes, personal responsibility does come in there. People can make a choice for what they want, but I think we can actually begin to increase the behavior choices that are positive and healthy. And the good thing about that is that everybody wins. Right now, if we see folks continuing to make unhealthy choices because they don't have a lot of great choices, then we see the cost going up for health care, which every taxpayer pays for when they're thinking about covering insurance for folks that are supported in the public dime, as well as in the private sector. Employers are paying more and more when their employees and their dependents are unhealthy. So it's everybody wins when we start to create new environments and new options that are reasonable. And I think that actually most people are looking for something that's delicious, affordable, and healthy. Most people want to take good care of themselves, but if you walk into so many settings, you don't have a great set of options. I think we can do a lot to turn that around.
I was interested in the survey that was part of the release, asking people how they describe their own health. And overwhelmingly, people in North Carolina think their health is good, very good, or excellent, with only 5% poor or 12% fair. And yet the statistics show that roughly 2/3 of North Carolina adults are overweight or obese. Is part of the challenge to make people actually understand and realize sort of where they are?
That is a very good question, and it's one of the ironic things. When you do ask people how healthy they are, you know, someone may have high blood pressure, they may have diabetes, and they may have some heart disease, and they still may say in our state that they have good or very good health. And part of that is because it is typical. It is not a normal situation, Chris, but it is common. So if you look around, you know, lots of folks in your neighborhood or your family or in your office may be in that same setting. And what we really do need to think about is that is the norm in many communities, and we need to create a new norm. And really, as you know, much of the diabetes we have is really what I call diabesity. It's really overweight and obesity-induced diabetes, high blood pressure, and those kinds of things. If most people began to change their eating patterns just a little bit and maybe started walking 2 or 3 times a week, you can see if someone loses between 5 and 10 pounds, they can actually bring down their blood pressure and their blood glucose at a level that one medication could have also achieved. So if you really think about the balance of the cost of getting it wrong and the health changes that happen with just a few lifestyle improvements, it's a powerful dose. And I think what we really need to do is change that norm so that people really think that having high blood pressure and having high blood sugar and having high blood cholesterol isn't the norm, but it's something that we can do. We have so many tools that we can do something about it to be successful.
Well, Meg, as always, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. And if folks want to take a look at the report card, they can click on ncpreventionpartners.org, and there's a copy of the report card there if folks want to look at it in more detail. And we would be very excited to work with any organization to begin to create a healthier environment. So thanks, Chris, for this opportunity.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.